Moto America fans, it's time for another episode of Off Track with Carruthers and Bice. You'll laugh, you'll cry, and you may even learn something from this unlikely pair and their special guest. The mic is yours, Paul and Sean.
Hello, Moto America fans. It is time for yet another episode of Off Track with Carruthers and Bice. They come hot and heavy week after week, and we just keep bringing them to you. I am Sean Bice here in Ohio, and I'm joined by our Moto America communications manager, Paul Carruthers, who is also the son of 1969 250cc world champion Cal Carruthers, who won that championship on a Benelli, no less. So I just wanted to mention that today, Paul. I got a question for you related to that. I just thought of this the other day. So I think it was you put up that photo of your daughter with Nikki, which was awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. Funny that popped up, the timing on that.
So it occurred to me, and I should have asked you this before, but I'm going to ask you on this episode here. So it's no surprise that you have a son named Kyle and a daughter named Carly, and they both begin with a K. Did you do that because of your dad?
Maybe a little bit, but it just kind of worked out that way.
Yeah.
Actually KJC, which is, he's KJC as well, because his middle name's John.
Oh.
But Kyle's middle name is Scott, so he's not a KJC, he's a KSC, so.
So did you play in the KJC as well?
I can't remember that far back. I don't, I'm not completely sure, to be honest, but let's go ahead and say we did.
Okay. I love when things work out like that. All right. Well,
yeah, that photo was from the Isle of Man. She went to, my dad did a thing there. I forget what year it was.
I remember when he went. Yeah.
Yeah. He did the parade lap thing for like the legends and stuff. And my daughter got to go with him. And it's cool because both of my kids have gotten to go on trips with him. Kyle did a thing in Italy where they went to this, like it was a Benelli reunion, and my dad was like the master of ceremonies or whatever. So both kids have got to see, like, you know, actually what a legend he is, especially when you go somewhere with him in Europe, you know?
Yeah, that's so cool. Hey, so let's talk about something else before we get our guest on for the week. And we'll be going to Ridge Motorsports Park next weekend. But yesterday, Paul, you announced the story about, so David Anthony is going to have, he has been riding this year on a Yamaha R1, but he's going to put Bobby Fong on. Is it that same bike or a different, did he get a different bike for Bobby?
No, I think it's the same one. Okay, I think he's taken a race or two off or whatever. I think I heard something about he was having some issues with an arm or something that he might get surgery on or whatever, but I don't know. I don't know what the truth is for that. I have to actually call Dave and see, but
okay.
No, it's, I think it's cool that Bobby's going to get the chance to ride that bike. It's obviously a good bike. It's a, you know, the ex, Jake Gagne bike from last year. So it's a good super bike, and we all know how fast Bobby is. It's like, no matter what you put him on, he does well. And it'll be cool. It's just one more story, you know, to add to the spice of the superbike class.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it takes him off the table from the speculation, even mentioned by Chris Ulrich at Team Hammer and Vision Wheel M4X Star Suzuki team, where he kind of said that they were considering possibly like Brandon Posh. He mentioned Bobby Fong himself. So Bobby is now off the table for that deal. So we still are trying to find out or waiting word that of who's going to take that ride with Tony's announcement of retiring at Road America. I don't know. I'm kind of lost on it, because you kind of wonder who's going to be out there. That we were kind of thinking maybe Bobby a little bit, right, Paul?
Yeah, I think the thing with Bobby, though, is it has to be somebody that allows him to continue due to the Baggers series.
Yes.
And not everybody, you know, wants to have somebody that splits their time like that. But I know that's one of Bobby's considerations when it comes to taking a ride, is that, you know, he can continue with the Baggers. So,
yeah,
I think that's where the thing with Aussie Dave worked out fine. I think, you know, obviously Aussie Dave doesn't care. And you know, just wants him to get the opportunity to ride that bike. So it should work out fine.
Yeah.
But I don't know what the Vision Wheel M4 Suzuki team's going to do. I mean, it was nice this week to see that Brandon Posh was back on a bike, even though he actually did some supermoto, and then it looked like he was on a 600 or something somewhere. So he must be feeling a lot better and healed up. So that obviously puts him in the position where he's able to do a ride again. I'm also under the impression that when he is healthy enough or feels ready, that he gets that Altus ride back. So I don't know how that all works into the deal either. So.
Yeah, I don't either. And I mean, I know it's a step up, a big step up from a stock 1000 bike to a super bike, but he's at least been on a leader bike. So that'd be pretty incredible though, if he ends up getting that ride. I mean, that's a big task for him. And I'm not saying he's not up to it. He surely would be, but it'd be interesting to see. So let's talk about, speaking of somebody splitting their time, like Bobby Fong has done in the past and is going to do now between Baggers and Mission King of the Baggers and Medallia Superbike. We've got I like to call him our Pacific Northwest correspondent, Andy DeBrino, who definitely is, I think he's a legend up there, actually. I'm pretty sure he is. We always see him, or most of the time see him when we're up there. And it's weird. So he competed at Daytona, and I was looking, and I lost a little bit of track of this because I'm like, Daytona. So when else did the Mission Super Hooligan National Championship compete? And the answer is they haven't, but they
were. Right. I saw that too.
Their second round is coming up. So
I know it feels like we had a second round, but we didn't. So
yeah, this is kind of cool. Yeah, I was thinking Atlanta. I wasn't sure. So that class has had two races. Andy races a KTM 890 Duke. He had a decent Daytona, but when we bring him on, I want to ask him about race two. I'm not sure what happened there or went on with him. But the other thing he's doing is I had done a story earlier in the year about this. He is going to be racing in Supersport as of next weekend, and he's going to be on an MV Agusta F3 RR, which is a 798cc motorcycle. So it fits into that Supersport next generation. It's got an electronic throttle on it, so will it be able to be balanced or is going to be balanced going into it? It's a bike that's doing decently in World Superbikes or World Super Sport. So it's definitely a cool bike. I mean, it's expensive, that's for sure. And I really applaud the fact that Andy is going to ride it. Earlier in the year, we had Danilo Lewis, who is making some attempts to ride the bike too. He competed in maybe a couple rounds, but I think he's stopped doing that. And we'll maybe ask Andy about that. He seems to know some stuff on that. So anyway, long introduction for our correspondent from the Pacific Northwest, but Andy DeBrino, welcome.
Hey, thank you very much.
So Andy, I want to start out by asking you about Hooligans. So weirdly enough, we're going to have our second round, and boy, it's tough to string together a season when you got, you know, back in March with Daytona, and now here we are towards the end of June, almost the end of June, and you're going to be back on the bike again. Do you even remember Daytona?
I tried to forget, but unfortunately I still remember.
Was it a tough round for you? I mean, I think you did okay in the first race, but I didn't really get a chance to talk to you to ask you what happened in the second race, but maybe you can give us the rundown on that.
Yeah, it was tough. Race one, we got fifth, and it was a lonely fifth. You know, we had a good start, was briefly in the lead out of the hairpin or whatever it is, turn two, three, and then Bobby motored by, and yeah, we had nothing on the straights for the 1200s and 1250s. And so for race two, you know, me and some other riders on the KTMs and other bikes, you know, that are kind of at a horsepower disparity, we asked if we could take our lead weight off. So we met with Roland and Teague, and we had a meeting, and they said, all right, we'll try it, we'll see what happens. And it definitely helped. Before the red flag came out, I was up front battling, and instead of just getting dropped as soon as we hit the bank, I was able to at least stay in the draft and stay in that battle, and things were shaping up really good. But then the red flag came out, and I think on the restart, it was just a combination of that front tire losing a little bit of heat. And also, one thing to keep in mind, my suspension was valved for last year's weight rule. That was 420 pounds. And now my bike with all the lead weight was probably somewhere in the range of 370 pounds. So
wow, that's a lot.
Anyway, I was just trying to, you know, make a pass on the first lap in turn five and hit a bump and tuck the front. And, you know, we saw some really good slow motion footage. A friend of mine was filming me in that corner and you could see the front bottoming and then I tucked the front. So I think it was just a combination of, you know, being on the wrong line and the tire not being up to temp. So, you know, stuff happens, but I was able to remount. And it's funny, it took me like a second to remember that this is a club racing and that you can actually rejoin the race if your bike's okay. So, you know, I did rejoin and my handlebars were all tweaked. My brake master cylinder was all messed up. My lever was like pointing to the sky and I had no rear brake. Like there's a lot of things messed up. I had no steering dampener that broke, but I still climbed my way up and got a few points, you know, but so I don't know. I was proud I got up and finished, but yeah, it was a tough weekend, but spirits were up, you know, that we were in the battle that second race at least.
So to your point, you're riding an 890 versus 1200s and big bikes for sure. And under a little bit underpowered for sure. Underpowered. And you're out on the high banks with aerodynamics playing a part, which I know that's not part of this series. It's all about high handlebars and no fairings, really. What is it like to ride that bike out there? I mean, you get blasted and buffeted around a lot because you don't have any streamlining, really?
It's really not that bad. Daytona was awesome. Those bikes are so much fun. It's funny, this past weekend at Portland, it was worse at Portland International Raceway because it was actually just so windy. And I was literally like getting blown off the back tail of my bike. I had to like really hold on to the thing and like keep myself planted. So yeah, no, Daytona wasn't bad at all. Those things, you know, they're pretty fun. You know, maybe I'm just used to it, but everyone always like, they're always wigged out or concerned whenever they're getting on one of those things that it's going to be, you know, uncomfortable or hard to hold on to, but it's not.
So Andy, no, that's Daytona, you know, that's high speed track. It's all about staying in the slipstream when you can, but you're going to be coming here to Ridge Motorsports Park, a track, you know, well, first time for Super Hooligan on that track. You've been riding the bike, obviously outside of even of our series. And it's a tighter track, obviously, although it's still high speed. How do you feel your chances are going to be on that bike at your home track?
I feel really good. I mean, honestly, I won't be satisfied with anything less than a win. You know, the KTM is an amazing bike. It's going to be perfect for the Ridge. They've done a weight rule adjustment. So we do get to run the bike a little bit lighter, than when we started the year. So that'll play into my favor. So hopefully the bike thing will be balanced now. I mean, it's the way the rules are written, like I'm never going to be able to make my bike as powerful as theirs. So in theory, the bike should be allowed to be a little bit lighter, but the weight rules for everybody. So the Indians, the Harleys, they can do whatever they want, but I don't think it's going to be possible for them to get their bikes down to the weight that mine is. You know, they're going to have to make everything out of titanium to do that probably. So it should be good. You know, it's my home track and I've had some good results there. And, you know, even though I haven't been at Moto America since Daytona, I've been doing some club racing and we got some good racers locally. So I feel really good. I feel really confident for it.
Andy, you're one of those guys that's like, and I always think of, I kind of put you in the same category as Stefano Mesa, where, well, this year we've seen him all the time, but in years past, we see him periodically. He comes in and like you, just goes really fast and runs at the front and ends up on the podium somehow, and then goes away and we don't see him for a while. Is the fact that you haven't really been able to do full seasons, is that a financial thing or is it life and you have other stuff going on at home that you need to be there for?
It's a little bit of both. Last year, you know, So when Moto America first started, you know, the first 2 years we did full seasons and we were planning on the full season in 2017, but then that Super Hooligan series started back when it was just dirt. So, you know, a few years I kind of had other interests pull me away, but the last couple of years I've been really focused back on road racing. Last year I made an attempt to do the full series and, you know, if it was kind of Brainerd where things kind of exploded for me. You know, unfortunately, I started the season with a bike that wasn't intended to go the whole season. We were planning on just club racing that ZX10, and instead I was club racing and doing Moto America. So that thing kind of just expired at a bad time and put me in a position where I needed a different bike for Brainerd. And I was able to come up with some money and get a bike. But then the bike I bought that on paper was supposed to be awesome ended up being a nightmare, and you know, I barely even got to ride that weekend, and then it turned into a thing where the bike had to come apart, and that was the Honda Triple R, and parts were rare and we just couldn't get parts. It took forever to get parts. You know, we didn't get parts until December, and so that just ended my season early there. So last year we went for it, it didn't work out, and that's okay. And then this year, you know, a little bit financial. It's, you know, racing isn't easy, but, you know, I'm definitely luckier than most. You know, I work hard to get to, you know, to do the sponsorship stuff and, you know, raise money and, you know, do whatever I can. So, but it's also nice to just kind of sit back and have like a condensed schedule with Super Hooligans and then, you know, come out and do the super sport stuff. But, you know, going forward, I want to be out there full time, but, yeah, there's been some other factors and stuff at play, but yeah, I love the series. I'd like to be out there all the time.
Okay, so we go to Ridge Motorsports Park next weekend. Now, we always hear like this is this guy's home track, and is this really your home track? I mean, location wise, it is, but how often do you actually get to race there?
Well, I get to race there like at least 3 times a year. I mean, okay. It's Portland International Raceway is really, really my home track. I mean, I live 20 minutes away from there. It's in Oregon, but the Ridge is 2.5 hours away. So I consider it a home track. You know, I've been going there for quite a long time. I know it. And so, yeah, I like calling it my home track, and the people there are amazing. They do a lot for me. They're actually, you know, sponsoring me this year a little bit, and they've let me like before the very first Moto America race at the Ridge in 2020, they had the track shut down for a couple of days doing some track maintenance and prep. And they let me come out with my BMW E36 drift car and my KTM 790 flat track bike. And I did like a drift video out there while the place was shut down. So like, they're a really cool track. So I love working with those folks there.
Hey, Andy, I'm going to tell a story out of school here for a minute, and I promise I won't get you in trouble with this, but I had to laugh last year. I think it was last year we talked about this. So the thing that's known about Ridge Motorsports Park is we put a chicane in there that isn't there when you guys do club racing. And I remember last year, a couple of, if not one or two unnamed riders missed the chicane a couple times. And I said to you, Andy, I was like, hey, isn't that kind of hard? I mean, you do a lot of racing here and you race here without the chicane. Is it hard for you to remember to do the chicane when it's Moto America? And you said, no, you just have to have a brain. So
that makes a lot of sense, actually.
We do use the chicane, but it's on the start that we go past it.
I forgot that, which is even harder in my mind to do it once and then not do it.
Yeah, I don't really know the full reason for that, but I don't know. It's not that hard to remember. I don't know why it's so difficult for people.
Right. You go down there and you go left. Everybody else is going left. Just go left.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, so since you ride it both ways, Andy, I mean, obviously the reason we put it in there is because that first turn there is pretty gnarly. Are you a proponent of that chicane? I mean, do you understand?
Oh, yes. Yes. Okay. I love the chicane. Without the chicane, it's gnarly. Like I've raced there before, and I wrecked a R1 pretty good there a couple years ago just because that first corner so fast and that there was a little tailwind and turned in, the front started tucking. But so I just kind of pushed out wide. And at that point, I was already committed. And then, you know, I'm turned in and there's not a lot of runoff left once you're kind of turned in and committed. So I know they've done improvements in the runoff areas, but back when this was, you know, the runoff was a lot rougher. So I had a hard time just keeping the wheels on the ground to get, you know, to stop the bike. So I like the chicane. It's a lot of fun, especially because like they got all the RV spots in front of that now. So you can, if you're a fan, you can be watching there and watching bikes back it into that corner. So I like it.
So I got to drop a couple names in here before we move on to the MV thing. I want to ask you about some other Pacific Northwest riders. Well, the first one I want to find out is do you ever see Sam Verderico anymore?
You know, I see photos of him on Facebook on his boat. That's all I see.
Yeah, so he has. Yeah, that's all we see. I mean, he hasn't been doing any club racing up there, huh? Since
nothing. I mean, I can't really blame him. He got a big boat, like in a lake, and it's nice all the time, mostly where he's at. You know, I guess it might be kind of hard to come back once you get used to that.
Yeah, it definitely seems that way. And the other one, I met this person last year at Ridge, and I'm actually embarrassed to say I haven't talked to them since Ridge last year, but they are now competing in our full season. It's Mallory Dobbs. I got a chance to talk to her last year. I was quite taken by her. She's one of your opponents in Super Hooligan on a Ducati Piper Motard. I think she raced at Daytona against you. Did you have an influence in her getting involved in Moto America? How well do you know her? And did you influence her in getting into Super Hooligan at all?
I know her pretty well. Yeah. She, you know, I think the whole Moto America thing was all, that's definitely all her doing. The Super Hooligan thing, maybe I had a little bit of influence in that. I know that series is really attractive enough on its own, but yeah, I've been kind of like, I was kind of the lone guy at the start of the year. And then I kind of rallied up some riders and, you know, we got some more at Laguna. And I think, you know, she saw that and it's, you know, it's hard not to get sucked into it when, you know, your friends and stuff at the club are all getting into it. So yeah, now going to the Ridge, I think there's like 8 or 9 of us versus last year when we raced at Laguna, which was the closest race to us. I think it was just maybe 2 or 3 of us from the Northwest. So yeah, it's exploded. There's been a bunch of people that have gotten KTM 890 Dukes, and then Mallory has the Hyper Motard, and then Hannah Johnson, she's another gal from the Pacific Northwest, and she's going to be on a Monster, Ducati Monster. So
oh, I saw that. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So that, there's a lot of new people getting into it. I know EDR just finished up another KTM for AJ Peasley, who's another local rider. He's a local rider. He just moved to Texas, but he still club races and stuff. He's from here. So yeah, there's lots of people that like just got brand new bikes built that are coming out that weren't at Daytona. So it'd be cool to have a few more faces in there. And I think like you look at the class as a whole, there's more hooligans out of the Northwest doing the series than anybody.
There's 35 entries. Did you see that, Sean?
Yeah.
Incredible.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it really is. And it's a good track to see that on. That's going to be fun to watch. You know, about that, Andy, regarding the riders from the Pacific Northwest, there are quite a few, but I think, like, again, I think of you as being our guy from there. So tell me this, because of the fact that I'm located in Central Ohio and I can actually drive to several of our rounds, I feel pretty blessed with the fact that a lot of racing is in, you know, around this area. Do you feel sometimes like you're on an island somewhere out there and you just like you're so far away from where most of our tracks are? It just seems.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's always been difficult, especially, you know, as kind of like a privateer, you know, small team type of thing. I remember talking about an East and West thing back when we were racing Super Stock 600 and back when Stock 1000 kind of started. So yeah, that's why I'm not racing Stock 1000 this year, is because there's no West Coast races. So for me as a West Coast rider, it doesn't make sense for a lot of my sponsors that are mostly based on the West Coast to sponsor me and send me off for an East Coast series. So that was a big reason why I switched to Supersport this year with no stock 1000 at the Ridge or Laguna. So it is kind of like being on the island sometime, but you know, I've traveled a lot and it's so nice up here. We have some long, you know, winters sometimes, but you know, this time of year right now makes it all worth it. So, and we get good competition coming out of here too. So it's like, there's not really a reason to move, but I don't know. It seems like there's better places you could be living, I guess, if you're a road racer.
I'm going to date myself a little bit here, but I actually went to Portland International Raceway. It was like my first year at Cycle News. It was like 1985 or 1986. And they had an AMA. They kind of called them pro-ams, but they were superbike races. And the one I went to, it might have been the first or second race I ever covered for Cycle News. I remember it was back-to-back with one in Seattle at Seattle International Raceway. And Dale Quarterly won that race back then at Portland. What my question is, I think when we went there then, the main issue with the track had something to do with the drag strip. I can't remember if it was the entrance to the drag strip or the exit. But there was really only a couple of quote unquote sketchy parts. Has that changed at all? Or is that a racetrack that Moto America, could you see Moto America ever going there?
I think Moto America could come here, but it would take, there'd be some improvements. And I know people, I don't know exactly who, but I know people have come from Moto America. I think Josh Hayes actually might be one of the riders that I can think of that's come out to check out the facility, or maybe it was Jeremy Toy, because I know Toy's done like a bunch of Kawasaki shoots here. They used to do rent the track out for their Kawasaki street bike shoots. But anyway, for me, the track doesn't really feel sketchy. I mean, there's a lot of walls, but it's real similar to like Road America or Brainerd in a few ways. But really, what is keeping the track from being able to hold an event is the fact that there's no bridge or tunnel to get into the infield where all the teams and stuff would pit. Right. So essentially to move anything, you have to shut the track down. So I think that's like an infrastructure thing that really keeps Moto America and other, you know, events from coming. However, you know, PIR just had NASCAR a couple weekends ago, and then coming up, they have the only Formula E round in the United States. So there's a bunch of things they're doing to improve the track. They're finally putting my dad's FIA, FIM non-slip paint on the curbs. And, you know, my dad's been making that for I think 10 years now, and they're just finally doing that. So
that's like the stuff that's homologated by FIM, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. FIM, FIA. So that's what they use at Formula One and MotoGP tracks and a lot of Moto America tracks. So yeah, it's tough because Portland's a city park. It's not really, it's a racetrack, but doesn't operate entirely like a racetrack. So, you know, it logistically it's a gem. It's, you know, basically inside a major city, right off the major interstate and right by a major airport. So it couldn't be a better location from a fan perspective and really everything. It's just the facility, you know, it's not that it's not nice. It's a decent facility. It's just, they need to do some infrastructure upgrades. I mean, they've been bringing in a bunch of stuff for these NASCAR and IndyCar and Formula E races. Like they build all the scaffolding and they make towers and buildings, all this stuff that they bring just for the event because they don't have it. And, you know, there's a pedestrian bridge to cross over into the infield, but I mean, if anytime, yeah, we have track crossings. So I don't know, maybe one day we could have a round there, but it would require some significant work from the track. I think the racetrack itself is raceable. It's just right. the rest of it.
The infrastructure's not there.
Yeah. Huh.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this MV F3RR that you're going to be racing in Super Sport at Ridge. Is it, have you spent a lot of time on it, or is this like is it the first time you're going to be seeing it and riding it? Or have you been right club racing with it?
I rode the bike the day after I picked it up back in, I think, January or February. and I haven't rode it, and it's still not together. It's hopefully hitting the dyno today. It's just been, you know, I knew coming into this that it was going to be a difficult project. For one, it's kind of a unique bike, not a rare bike, but a unique bike. Not a lot of people ride them. I mean, obviously there's the World Supersport team, and now there's like one or two smaller teams maybe racing the bike in BSB. And so I knew there was going to be some lead times to get parts, and I knew there was going to be challenges, and there's just been a few more challenges than I anticipated, but that's part of it. And, you know, everyone's doing the best they can, and, you know, we're learning, and it's looking really good. I mean, I just been telling people now that it's like a fine wine, you know, it's taken a little bit of time, but it's going to be sweet when it's done. I mean, I've been checking this thing out and the parts and stuff on it, and I got the bodywork all done up, like things so beautiful. So, you know, as part of this super sport next generation, you know, you have to have valve springs and a transmission that's required. So, you know, we got those in. The transmission, it's just a different like gear ratio. I think it's taller internal ratio because the stock one, the gearing's really short. I remember Eric EDR, he had one of these bikes that he built when they first came out in 2015, and I rode it, and the thing, he had a geared as tall as he can make it geared, and it was just still too short. So it's good that they require those parts. The valve springs, I believe, is just for reliability increase. And then we do the solo engineering, you know, electronics, the wiring harness and ECU and all that stuff, so they can control the RPM and balance the bike. And then we got a data logger, the one that Teague from Moto America recommended that they use on all the other bikes. So they'll be able to balance my bike correctly. So, you know, there's just a lot of working pieces to get this thing together, but it's coming together. So I'm hoping to ride the bike this weekend. So
I was surprised, Andy, too, when we talked to yesterday or texted back and forth. You know, I had mentioned the thing about Danilo Lewis, and you actually knew quite a bit about what was going on with his situation and understood where he was coming from a little bit with some of the teething pains he's had. But that's you. So you were definitely following that story a little bit, huh?
Yeah. It came out as a surprise because I was at Daytona, and, you know, they showed up with the MV, and, you know, I had announced maybe a couple of weeks prior to Daytona that, yes, I was going to be running the bike, and I was supposed to be like the only guy doing it. And all of a sudden they show up. And so I'm still kind of baffled. I don't know 100% of the story, like how they even got the bike together. Cause I remember I ordered my electronics, and, you know, they told me it was going to be 2 months or something, but, you know, I don't know. It sounded like their deal was pretty last minute. And I think they actually got the electronics that I had ordered, and they gave them to them because they were actually going to race Daytona. So they were more of a priority. But yeah, I don't think that bike was spec'd out or built out the way it was supposed to be. I mean, I haven't talked with that team since Daytona, but I've been watching, and, you know, just a little bit I've heard, I think that there's been, you know, and obviously there's been some struggles for them, and I don't know. I don't want to speak for them, but I think part of it was maybe they didn't have that data logger. So, you know, that's a big thing for trying to balance these bikes. You know, the right, little bit I'd heard, I think they were, you know, trying to figure out a way to make the bike quicker. And so,
yeah.
I don't know. I feel like nothing against them. I love Danilo. He's an amazing rider, and, you know, I'm excited and stoked to see him out there racing, but I feel a little bit more confident about how my program is going to go, and, you know, with how we got our bike set up and the people behind us.
Yeah. I was surprised as you were, because you're right. I mean, I had written that story about you having this MV, and then Danilo, we were in the media center. He was getting his photo taken, and, you know, I have conversations with him that are kind of broken a little bit because it's hard. His English is spotty, and my Spanish is non-existent. So basically he kind of, I got the across the idea. He said he was on the MV and I didn't even see it on the entry list. And then we talked, well, I think I saw him, might've been at Barber. I don't remember where, but he was telling me and he kind of was doing the thing with his right hand, you know, his throttle hand, acting like he didn't have, you know, the power he wanted or something like that. So I gather that's what maybe the issue was, but yeah. And I know you've been working on this for a while. The thing that's interesting though, is, you know, you, gosh, the state of Washington or Oregon, you know, well, they're two different states. I do know that, Andy. So I don't know why I put them together like that.
The Northwest, Sean, yeah, just go with that.
It's about as far from Italy as you can get and still be in this country. So was it you, your relationship with Eric Dorn that kind of got you focused on MV Agusta? How did it come about?
So it came about, you know, last fall as I was kind of, you know, when the schedule for the new, you know, classes came out and I was just like, man, like, what am I going to do? Like, Stock Thousand isn't racing the Ridge or Laguna. And so I thought, like, all right, well, maybe I'll race Superbike, but I'll be honest, like, I want to be battling for podiums. I don't really care about battling for top 10s, which is realistically what I'm battling for on a Stock Thousand spec bike inside the Superbike class. And right. So yeah, I wasn't really interested in that. And then I play Call of Duty quite a bit with Greg White, and Greg was kind of the one that planted the seed, because that was right when all the news was going around that KTM had acquired, you know, a share of MV Agusta. And so yeah, that kind of started thinking about that. And then yeah, I talked with Eric Dorn, EDR Performance, and I know he had built an F3 800 when they first came out, and I rode it at the Ridge and at PIR one time, and I thought it was a really cool bike. And then literally I'm friends on, you know, Instagram, and I know John Hines, the CEO of KTM. And I responded to an Instagram story of his. He was somewhere and there were some MVs in a picture. And I was like, hey, like, you got any F3s around? And it kind of just went from there. It was really just kind of shot in the dark, and he seemed interested. And my other contacts at KTM I deal with, you know, were supportive, and there was really no plan behind it. And it was just kind of a run and gun type scenario. I mean, it was basically just like, you know, we talked about it briefly and kind of had a plan. And then like 2 months later, they're like, hey, we got a bike, come get it. And so I went down there and got it, and I've kind of been on my own ever since. So there's still a lot of stuff moving around and being figured out between, you know, KTM and MV, but it's cool just to kind of have, to be running another class on something that's kind of within the KTM group, you know? So, I mean, they've been really supportive of me and Super Hooligans on the KTM. And, you know, that's been really, really fun and really special for me. And again, for them to support that in the extent that they do, and then not care that I'm racing a Kawasaki or, you know, racing a Honda, whatever it may be. Like, I think that's just super cool of them, you know? So, I mean, it must be like a similar situation where, like, you look at Travis or Kyle Wyman when they're riding for Harley, but they get to race, you know, super bikes on other brands. Like, it's cool that manufacturers are allowing riders to do that. So again, for me, it's just this helps strengthen my relationship with KTM even more. Like, I'm not racing a KTM in Super Sport, I'm racing the MV Agusta, but it's another brand that they're involved with. So yeah, for me, you know, my goal is, I want to be a factory racer someday. And I feel like this relationship I'm building and getting to do this, like, is a step towards that. Hopefully, you know, I don't know if there'll ever be a KTM factory road race team or an MV factory road race team in Moto America, but I feel like I'm kind of slotting myself as the guy if there ever was. But
yeah, that's a cool niche. That's a good way to go. I mean, for sure, because I mean, and it definitely, marketing wise, I mean, think of the fact that, you know, other than Lewis, who may not be, you know, continuing with that bike, you're the only MV out there. So it's kind of cool. You know, you get attention based on that. That bike. So you're a Stock 1000 guy, super bike guy, leader bike guy, I should say. Is that, do you fit on that bike okay? The MV?
I think so. It's for sure the smallest bike I've sat on and rode on in quite a long time. When I rode the bike, it was literally like just for a track day at Button Willow, and I was just farting around on it, just kind of breaking it in and feeling it out. And it was cool. Like it gave me some good vibes. And what's really cool, I mean, yeah, I know Danilo came out and did it, but I'm on the F3RR. This is the latest bike. It's got the new bodywork, which I think this is the most beautiful looking road race bike there ever has been. I mean, the way it's designed, the way it's got the, you know, the winglet or like the aero package, whatever you want to call it, on the side of the fairings. The thing is just gorgeous. So, you know, I think like once you guys see my bike and see my leathers and see my helmet, I mean, it's going to be the best looking in the paddock. I mean, it's kind of, if you're familiar with the MV Reparta Corsa team in Italy, it's similar looking to what they have. So I'm going to look the best, you know. I hope to ride good and, you know, do it all justice. The goal was that, like, when we started this deal, like, I wrote down, like, I want to be at Road America, you know, I want to be testing before Road America, and that hasn't happened. And that's, you know, that's the way it is. That's racing, you know, nothing ever goes wrong, but, you know, I'm not going to have, like, hopefully I'll get this weekend to ride it, you know, if not, whatever, but I'm pretty good at hopping on a bike and going, but yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be really cool looking, and I feel really confident about it.
Backing up a little bit to hooligans. That's it. Whenever I see whoever it is, whether it's Jeremy McWilliams or Chris Fillmore or Tyler O'Hara or you or anybody else, it seems like when you guys get off those bikes after a race, the smile's like permanent, right? It's like, for some reason, that racing just looks like it's a lot of fun. And it obviously is based on the fact of how happy you guys are when you're done racing and you're talking about it and this and that. Is it just a matter of how close the racing is? Is it that, you know, it's always kind of fun, I think, to ride or race a bike when you feel like you can override it. You know what I mean? Like you can do more than the bike's capable of, rather than like a super bike where you probably sometimes don't feel like you're even reaching its potential. Is that kind of the case with hooligans?
You know, that's difficult. For me, what I enjoy, I mean, it's just the style of the bike, the body position. It reminds me a little bit of Supermoto.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, the bikes are just, they're just fun. I mean, you would just have to ride one to know. That's the best way to put it. Like, you know, it's for sure the racing's good. But I don't know. Like I was just at Portland again, racing this past weekend, and that's like the worst track for an 890 Duke. You got nothing but long straightaways and, you know, barely any corners. There's 9 turns. So there's not a lot of areas to play to the strengths of that bike, but still I'm just having a blast. Like, you know, if I'm on a 600 at PIR, I'd be going faster and I'd be winning races on that thing. But I had so much fun getting seconds to David Kolstad, who is on his ZX6, and you know, he'll be racing at the Ridge in Super Sport. But I'll say I kept him honest, man. I was pressuring him, giving him a fit on the 890. And you know, he got me down the straightaway, and then I pretty much just wouldn't break, you know. I just go till I see God, like Rossi or whoever it was said, you know, on the brakes, and then just hammer down in the corners. And it's crazy for it being a naked bike and the KTM, especially since it's essentially a dirt bike. It's the Adventure, you know, they share the same frame between the Duke and the 890 Adventure. But man, that thing just turns, like it turns so good, and it handles the corner so well. So for me, the fun part is just knowing that it's not, you know, yeah, knowing that maybe it's a little bit at a disadvantage, but overriding it and overcoming that, like that's what I enjoy about riding the bike.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned David Kolstad, because he's another one we admire from, think a lot of, from up in that part of the country too. And I know he'll be competing against you on your MV. He'll be on a Kawasaki ZX6R, I believe, right, Andy?
Yeah. So we're actually getting ready to go up to the Ridge this weekend, because there's a Wemmer race. So I'm expecting, he'll be up there, obviously. He's also been riding 1000, going really fast.
Oh,
but yeah, he'll be on his ZX6 too, though, because that's what he's doing Moto America on. But and then we had Jason Uribe come out last weekend, and I heard some rumors about some other Moto America guys coming out. So, you know, this weekend will be interesting to see who shows up. And I think I heard some other hooligan riders are coming out. So, you know, it'll be like a little mini national this weekend for everybody.
That's cool. Was Jason on his Honda?
He was. Yeah. Yeah. Which he was riding the wheels off it. The thing's a little underpowered for PIR, you know? So yeah. I'm sure, I don't know if he's going to be on the Honda this weekend. I heard he might be on a Yamaha potentially. So maybe if that works out, you'll see him racing the Yamaha at Moto America. But
that'd be cool. A couple of years ago, I remember it was like, I think it was Thursday. We found out, maybe it was Wednesday, but anyway, it was right beforehand. We found out he was going to end up racing in that, in, you know, at that round. So it was good to see him there.
Yeah. Oh, we also had Brian Pinkstaff out, who is Shabby Forrest's crew chief. He was out racing in the Formula Ultra races with me on his ZX10.
Yeah, that, and his dad, is it Keith? Or his dad raced, I think, or I've talked to Brian about his
dad races. His uncle is Keith Pinkstaff.
Who, oh, yeah, Keith's right. Uncle. That's right.
Yeah.
I always do that, Tim, but it's, you know, I got to talk to him a couple of years ago and realized where he was part of that whole lineage. Hey, I want to go back. We're going to wrap here real quick, but I want to go back, Andy, to just asking you about the MV again. So you'll be in Super Sport for the two races next weekend at Ridge Motorsports Park. Will you be racing? Will you be at Laguna and any rounds after that on the bike?
Yeah, I'm signed up for Laguna, and you know, I don't know. I don't know how the extended thing is going to go. Like, there won't be anything special being done to the bike, but if it goes like the last race, it won't matter. So, yeah, we'll be doing Super Sport at Laguna, and I'm also planning on Coda because that's a hooligan round. So I'll bring the MV out there, and then New Jersey. We're gonna try to get the bike to New Jersey. I love that track. I got family there, so that'll be a great one to go to. And then, yeah, probably not Brainerd, maybe Pittsburgh. But if we're going to do Pittsburgh, then it kind of makes sense to do Brainerd. But we'll see. It just depends on how the Ridge and how Laguna goes, because I know there's some support from some potential sponsors and some sponsors I got to maybe try to get me to those other rounds. So, you know, I committed to doing Road America, and we still didn't have all the parts we needed, so we missed that one. But oh, I would have loved to have been that Road America. That track looked amazing. But anyway, yeah, hopefully everything, you know, gets wrapped up here in the next couple of days and we could finally go out and ride the thing and test. I mean, I know the suspension's going to be awesome. EDR, they know what I like. I'm running K-Tech on that bike. I've ran K-Tech for years. So like the suspension thing should be pretty dialed in. It's just a matter of, you know, learning the electronics and doing a couple other setup things, which I think we can get this done in a weekend if it all goes smooth. And I've been riding, so it's like, I feel like I'm sharp. So, you know, there'll be a little bit of a learning curve, but I think we can figure it out pretty quick and, you know, be competitive. I want to be, you know, that other manufacturer mixing it up with, you know, Mesa and Chavi and Hayes and Tyler Scott. Like, it'd be cool to have five brands, you know, battling up front. So mm-hmm. I hope I can do that at the Ridge, because that's going to be the best shot I got.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, Paul and I love that, because when we write about it, we can write about the fact that, yeah, it's a multi-mix. That's proof of concept of Moto America is, you know, not really parody, but at least a lot of manufacturers involved in it. So we're really excited to have you be part of it. And once again, what a crazy super hooligan season. So you start the season at Daytona, Then you have a bunch of rounds off. Then you go to Ridge. Then you have a week off. Then you go to Laguna, and then you have some more time off. And then you end the season at Coda. But it's got to be cool that you're going to be racing at Coda. I'm sure you're looking forward to that.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I've never rode Coda. You know, it looks like something. It's like a bucket list thing of mine to do. So
yeah,
it'll be sweet. But yeah, it's like, man, I haven't rode my Moto America key TM since Daytona. I'm going to have to shake it down this weekend, but I've been riding this other one I got, which is mostly stock, but it's, you know, the spread out thing's kind of nice. Cause like, it, you know, Daytona was such a scramble. We only had like, we didn't have a lot of time to get ready for the season. Cause they hadn't announced a whole lot prior, but yeah, it's kind of nice to have a break. Everyone can kind of go back to the drawing board, like refine some things. And there was enough time that some people that were at Daytona, you know, could build their own bike and come out. So like, that's literally like one of my friends who's out riding, like he was pitting for one of the other KTM riders. And at Daytona, he's like, I want to do this. And he called up a dealership here in Oregon and was like, hey, like I'm buying a bike. And he came home and got it immediately after. So yeah, it's cool. I mean, that's the beauty of this hooligan class for a lot of people is it, you know, it's more of like an entry level type thing for racers to get their feet wet. So
yeah,
there's a lot of people doing it that they wouldn't come out and do Moto America otherwise. And then at the same time, those same people, it kind of feeds them into other classes outside of hooligans. So it's a good thing for everybody.
Yeah, 100%. It's great for us. And as Paul said, we've got like 35 entries for that. So we'll be looking forward to that. And we'll be pulling for you a week, not this weekend, but next weekend at Ridge Motorsports Park, racing in two races in Super Sport and two races in Mission Super Hooligan National Championship. And that's Andy DeBrino, our correspondent from the Pacific Northwest. Andy, thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you in the flesh soon.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Andy. We'll see you next week.
Yep. Appreciate it. Bye.